Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness. I'm your host, Ant-Man. It's delightful to be back again. And I'm joined by our resident shaman, Heather Heaton.
Hello, Ant.
Thank you very much for agreeing to be on the show once more. I look forward to you sharing your knowledge with myself and all our listeners.
Thank you for inviting me again. You know how much I like being
absolute
here.
Absolute pleasure. So today, Heather, we're talking about the psychic. And the title of this episode is, So What is Psychic? So Who is Psychic?
Yes, okay, good. Let's go for it.
Yeah, so it's a very intriguing title.
Yes.
So first of all, I wonder if we could start, just for myself and our listeners, of course, what is psychic? It's of, you know, in the spiritual world and in the alternative, there seems to be, it's spoken about a lot, isn't it? There's a lot of supposed expert psychics out there. It tends to be an entry point for a lot of people that get into spiritual matters. But I wonder if you could just confirm with our listeners, what is psychic, or what is the psychic skill, I should say?
Yeah, I will add that I think it's been brought into the public eye of the past couple of decades quite profoundly, because there's a lot of people working in this field who have the title of psychic medium. So it's become a very well known and very well known title. And I think the reason for us to go with this today, I feel, is that I get a lot of people saying, I say to them, if you want a psychic, somebody to do psychic, do you want a like clairvoyance or do you want psychic? What is it? And people say, actually, I don't know the difference. I don't know what it is. Actually, I really don't know. So, in fact, although we have this publicity of psychic mediums, en masse nowadays, in fact, a great deal of the general public, I have found, really can't explain what it is, and they can't explain what it's all about and how it works, etc., etc.
So really, we're hopefully the by the end of the episode, you know, our listeners will have a better idea then.
Oh, they'll be scholarly on it. Academy level. Well, we see what we can do, and pass some information across to everybody, for those people that have some awarenesses, and for those that are inquiring and not sure what it's all about. And we welcome skeptics.
Of course.
Of course we do, yes.
That's what it's all about, being discerning, of course.
Being discerning. Well, consciously, you mean.
Of course. Always consciously.
Consciously discerning. Well, we'll go with that one.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is psychic? Well, straight away, I have to say, I believe, and I am convinced for very good reasons, really, that it is our sixth sense. And I find that difficult to say without my teeth popping out.
They're still hanging in there.
It's the age, you know, it's the age. The sixth sense. Literally the sixth sense. Would you understand what I would say by that?
Yeah, it's obviously the one that's far less recognised within mainstream society and culture. But yeah, I would concur.
Yeah, so let's go through it just so that I'm fully explaining. We have five senses that we're very aware of, don't we, as human beings. So we have, or mammals, we have sight, sound, smell, taste,
touch.
I nearly said hearing again. Hearing and sound. Touch. Those are the five senses that we're very conscious of and aware of. But I really do feel that the psychic skill is the sixth sense. And I want to point out to our listeners that each one of these senses is a different level of, is used at a different level of sensitivity.
Right.
So if you look at sight, we tend to be able to see three-dimensional and solid things quite adequately.
Yeah.
So we see sight as quite average and normal. If you are taste, you can taste something quite solid, shall we say, and so very accepting that that is the case.
So do you mean in terms of that it's quite a clear perception, is that what you're
saying? Yes, 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 very clear in sensitivity, correct. And then we'll come to, shall I say, the touch. Touch again, your awareness of touch. You can be touching something quite solid, something three-dimensional and solid. So that's a great acceptance. When it comes to hearing, hearing is much more subtle than those three previous senses. You're picking up on much more sensitive quality of absorption into your awareness and into your body than the previous three. Yeah. So, and when you come to smell, it's even more sensitive, because hearing, I think you can often adjust to what it is that you're hearing, which is some coming from something more solid that's making the noise. But when it comes to smell, I believe that we are taking in breathing in things that really you wouldn't notice half the time. Very, very much more subtle and very much more sensitive in what it is that you're breathing in.
There's a word that springs to my mind in terms of the sense of smell. It might be inappropriate, but it's almost ephemeral. It is less tangible.
Yeah, and I believe I've heard you say that the sense of smell is a very neglected
or underused certainly in modern society,
because it's so sensitive.
Yeah.
We neglect it. I would like to say that if you can imagine, people who are breathing in the same smell will probably be aware of the smell slightly differently, or even quite dramatically
processing it differently,
depending on the sensors in your nose and in your nasal system, and what happens when that information goes to the brain and the brain analyzes it. It will be slightly differently, or even massively differently, for everybody. This is exactly the sixth sense. The sixth sense is the next sense along that is very, very subtle, but everybody will be picking up on it slightly differently depending on their sensors, their antennae, and their configuration within their brain processing.
Right. So that's a very interesting sort of general description of the psychic being the sixth sense. I'd just like to raise another point about the senses. I mean, it's generally well accepted or well known, isn't it, for people who have a diminished one sense, say maybe somebody who's visually impaired, they will have, say, heightened hearing, or thereof, to kind of balance. It's quite common, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. But it is interesting. We all know the stories of a person who's been losing their ability of sight.
Yeah. Excuse me.
And especially after quite a long time of having lost good ability for seeing or sight, they develop awarenesses, but that can become from hearing, but very subtle hearing, smell, very subtle smell, almost undetectable, but it creates a perception. And it can be the nearness of somebody, so that the waves of energy between yourself and somebody walking towards you, for instance, perhaps you're picking up on those very, very subtly.
Of course.
And this all helps to, this all attributes towards the sixth sense, that very subtle one. But because it's so subtle and it's so ephemeral, as you say, very hard to pin down, because it becomes harder to accept or prove, even, that a lot of people in the public will also want to believe that it doesn't exist.
And can I also just make the point, in terms of the main five senses and how they link to the psychic, which we've established as being the sixth sense, when I've been to meditation groups or general spiritual groups, obviously, quite often you'll have joysticks lit, or there'll be, you know, certain instruments played, drumming, or so obviously the link between trying to connect to the sixth sense and the existing five senses is very strong. So it's almost like in order to make that transition to the six, or to open it up, if you want to use those words, it's about heightening the existing ones as well. I mean, I know from my own experience, I'm very much attuned to smells. I know that, you know, like when we go to Glastonbury and you get those lovely smells in some of the shops, I'm drifting.
Oh, gorgeous. I'm drifting off. I'm sure a lot of our listeners know exactly what we're talking about.
And I'm not woo-woo, but I begin to go into a different state of consciousness.
It has the ability to shift your consciousness from the brainwave pattern of awake into the slightly other zone. Yes, of course, that's what it's all for.
And for ceremonies, of course.
Yeah, which of course also is shifting the people involved in the ceremony. It's shifting their whole awareness so that they can get into that, shall we say, that sixth sense, that psychic part of us, that channel, that psychic part of us, so that we can connect with, very often, with the ancestors or with the elementals. It's to give us the ability to really accept those more subtle parts of existence on this planet.
So I wonder, Heather, now if we could just move on and look at more about this aspect of the title of the episode. So what is psychic? And just to bring in this, the notion of imagination and fantasy, because I know they're words that are often used in conjunction with psychic, because people, in terms of those that want to discredit the psychic skill, because they'll go, well, it's just imagination or fantasy. But I believe you have an interesting perception in that we shouldn't throw those concepts out, you know, a bit like the baby with the bathwater, because they are still an important element of developing psychic skill. Is that right?
The imagination.
And this idea of fantasy.
And the fantasy, yes. Mm. I think it's almost impossible to develop your sixth sense without having imagination, because the sixth sense is so subtle.
Yeah.
It's such a subtle area that you have to open up your mind to all the possibilities to be able to enjoy the experience of it. You can't have the experience of it without you open up to the possibilities of the subtle existences, subtle realms.
Sure.
So it's very important to have that. That's the imagination that helps you open up to it.
Mm.
So with the imagination opened up, you can then start tuning in to, in different ways with different practices, the more subtle existence, the more subtle realms, the more subtle happenings that are around. Once you've got that going, then you can build into, with development, the psychic ability, and then begin to use the psychic ability.
So that's interesting. Can I just interject at this point? Mm. So even the established, you know, world-renowned psychics who do the global circuit and earn lots of money, and we see some of them on TV, do they begin, when they first start, do they begin their session with using the imagination before they tune, say, right into an individual person? Is that how they would begin?
I think it happens in nanoseconds.
Yeah, they just shift quicker through it.
Nanoseconds.
Yeah.
They do have to get to a place of balance. They do have to get to a place of, if they're going to communicate with the spirit world, of finding their guides and finding a way of bringing the holiness into for protection. But we'll talk about that in a little while on this episode.
Mm.
So they do need to do all of those things, but they practice to do it. Now, people who start off from childhood with quite a developed psychic already have those things ongoing.
Mm.
People who, it's intermittent, they get an episode or a moment every now and again, and then feel they want to develop in adult life their psychic skill, then they do need to learn to do those things and then learn to speed up those practices in order to work the psychic channel, shall we say. Yes. Mm. The other side of that is what we call fantasy. Yeah. It's the fantasy, shall I say, of the imagination. Mm. So I want to be sure that everybody listening understands that when we're talking about imagination, we're not talking about fantasy.
Right. So it's important to make that distinction.
Absolutely. Fantasy is where you open up imagination. Apologise for that. Backpedal. Imagination is where you open up to the subtle and you allow yourself to open up so that you can start experiencing the subtle. And it's real.
Mm.
Fantasy is where we make up stories for enjoyment, entertainment and fun. Where we design anything and everything.
Sexual fantasy, of course.
Oh, thank you for that. And that I wasn't expecting, I have to say. I was about to make some rude comments then, but I won't. Okay, but it is for imagination and probably in the area that you have just mentioned as well. But fantasy is definitely for storybooks. Mm. It's for fun, for enjoyment, for pastime, for entertainment, for design, for creating things. Of course it is. So it's the most beautiful skill to have. But the imagination in the psychic channel is a different area of concept. It feels the same when you're in one or the other. I mean, it feels completely different. It's not the same when you're using your psychic skill or whether you're using your imagination to fantasize, creating things. It's a different feeling altogether when it's active within a person as well.
So when a person is developing their psychic skills, obviously it's important for them to have that awareness of the difference between fantasy and imagination. Is that correct? Because sounds quite a subjective thing. Yeah. I mean,
it's you'll find that when people are raising their psychic skill in training sessions, it's very hard to tell the difference.
Sure.
And you get a lot of people say to me, "But how do I know I'm not making it up?" Mm. I think it's important for people to understand the difference between fantasy and imagination, and of course. Making up, you have to have imagination and allow yourself to run with it until you start getting some proof.
Mm.
And you're not going to get proof that what you have just psychically brought about or perceived, you're not going to get proof until you open up the imagination and just keep going with it. Until the psychic thing happens, the event happens, and there is confirmation.
Mm.
That's when you get to understand, when you have that experience, what that felt like.
So it's only
felt
gonna come
different.
With practice, really.
Yes, and so it's really the fantasy will interfere in the early stages of practicing.
And I believe, obviously, you teach psychic skills. You've done various workshops over the years.
Yes.
Obviously, that's something that when you're teaching people, you know, they must struggle with, really.
Yes, but I think the minute people understand that it's okay to go through the imagination, whether it be fantasy or whether it be the psychic, and to keep going with it, but check it out. And the minute that they, as I said before, that they get that sense of proof, then they suddenly get a recognition and the mystery is resolved, shall we say, then. Yes. Mm. So that's what people have to do.
Mm.
And yes, you're right. It's not going to, that no, people aren't going to get to that point if they're as adults trying to re-raise, shall I say, reassert their psychic skill, they need to go through all those processes. So it is about going to groups or teachers and practice such disciplines. It's quite important to do that and to keep going.
Yeah,
perseverance is what it all, but it pays off. It literally pays off.
So I wonder, Heather, now if we could talk about some different types of psychic.
Okay. Right, everybody's heard of clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudience, to name a three. Just to say that clairaudience is known as the hearing the spirit world,
right,
or hearing other sounds, shall I say. Clairsentient,
or sentience.
Sentience is sensing. Sentient, I think you'll find.
Oh, is it? All right,
yes,
okay.
It's a French word.
Oh, okay.
And clairvoyance. A clairvoyance is seeing clearer. Well, it's seen as seeing the spirit world clearly, or members that are in the spirit world that you would call spirits or ghosts. But in fact, it's actually seeing whatever is being tuned into clearly, or getting a sense of words or phrases in your ears, shall we say, or your inner ears, or having a real sense or a feeling of something that you need to. But it doesn't necessarily mean the spirit world.
No.
It can be purely using the psychic, because that is different. Using the psychic skill is different than communicating with the spirit world. Although, to be able to communicate with the spirit world, you need a well-developed psychic skill.
So is that the difference between mediumship and psychic?
Well, how can I say
again,
that?
I suppose they cross over as well. It's difficult.
As they say, in the eye of the beholder, it depends on who titles themselves being what, to whether they call themselves medium. But of course, a medium is the word that's an in-between.
Yeah, a channel.
In between. So it's in between whatever you're doing, really. But we have got this good cliche of being a medium that we do see now as somebody who communicates with the spirit world, for instance, but we've also morphed it into being another word for psychic. So it just depends what people understand from it, really.
So I believe we also have telepathy, psychometry, and remote viewing.
Yes. I'm going to say with remote viewing, there is a specific practice for remote viewing. Remote viewing, I'm just going to make this in simple terms. The remote viewing is where you can send your awareness to a place in another part of the planet, even if it's not very far away. It could be a long way away. The famous way of doing that is to use map coordinates to a place. And usually people that have done remote viewing tend to in the past have been doing that for certain reasons, to do something. But there is a way of tuning in psychically to another part of the planet, to an event, and be able to read an event that's going on. And it can be an event of the past, it can be an event of the future, or it can be an event that's taking part now. And you can do that with your psychic skill, which I would be less likely to title that remote viewing. Remote viewing is better titled where you send your awareness to a particular place, on the planet, particularly using map coordinates, shall we say.
It sounds very Dan Brown-esque. I'm sure certain parts of the government use that regularly for monitoring purposes.
I believe it's been well used in the past for the bigger governments, shall we say, the stronger governments or the more powerful governments. I believe it's still being used definitely in Russia. We can't say about the Western world, but we are suspicious that those skills are still being used, because I think they were proven back in the 60s to be effective for military use.
And we'll touch a little bit on this issue when we talk about the usefulness of psychic skills in a minute or two. So there's a question that's popped in my mind after you've just want to clarify some. Did you just want to clarify some further points?
Well, I just wanted to say, of course, there's telepathy and psychometry. Telepathy. I wanted to say that I think a lot of people are not sure about telepathy. Telepathy is a very difficult skill to master. Mm. I do believe that when people are very developed psychics, and I believe when they're doing a reading of someone, I think sometimes they tune in telepathically and read something of what is going on in the mind of the client that they're reading for at the time. But I don't think it's always possible to tell when you're tuning in and picking up information about a person's life that you're reading for psychically or telepathically, mind to mind, or psychically. Very hard to tell, I think, in most cases. Some people might disagree with me, but I think that may be the bottom line.
A common example that springs to mind is the classic thing that's happened to all of us, where we'll think of someone and they'll text or phone us, or we might think of someone who we haven't seen for maybe many months or many years, and then in a few days' time we actually bump into them. I mean,
well, I was going to say that I think you'll find that most people, if they try to sit down and tune into somebody's mind and read their mind telepathically, they would find it very hard to do. But it is interesting that we have this phenomena take place where, yes, you can think of somebody quite powerfully and suddenly find that they're ringing you or texting or something
passing
connecting
you in the street.
With you. But it's interesting when we don't try to do it, how often this momentary telepathic communication takes place. Now, is that psychic or is that telepathic?
That's a great point you make. It does, these instances just do come to us. It's often we're not willing them, and it just,
and it's happening.
Isn't
to
that interesting?
Even the skeptics, it happens a lot to. What does that tell you? It tells you that we are very active in using these skills more than we like to believe.
Did you want to make any further points on the
just
different
psychometry
types?
Psychometry is very often used by psychics to begin to tune into the energy of the client and the whatever they're going to read. But psychometry can be used on its own. It's not unusual if you just want to read the information off of the classic is jewelry, but it can be any object, but particularly objects that have an energy vibration or energy vitalness about it. So plastic is very hard to read, shall we say, because it has a very low vibration.
In terms of psychometry, what always springs to my mind, I don't know if you've seen it, but the classic Polanski film Rosemary's Baby, where she's given this sort of necklace, and the person before who had it committed suicide, and there's this whole sort of storyline. But
I can't remember.
It's very, very interesting, and obviously they're speaking to that in the film.
Right, and she picks up on the energies, and in the film
she becomes, you know, deathly ill almost. You know.
Yeah, because there is a gentleman on television on some of these psychic programs now, isn't there? Who is in America, that collects his artifacts, that is believed to be doing connected with the haunting in houses, and takes them away. And he has, I can't remember his name, but he has a museum. So goodness knows what his house is like, or his museum attached to his house, but it must be the most haunted place there is with all the artifacts. So yes, it is known that things, energies attach themselves to objects, all objects, and some have a higher attraction to those energies than others. Jewelry, as we know, is because there's a lot of metal in it, very often in jewelry, and that's very absorbent of energies, as we know.
Is it also because with jewelry, it tends to be a sentimental thing, so people have quite a lot of emotion in terms of...
Well, that, not necessarily, but yes, can be.
Mm.
It can. It's just the wearing of, and it's sitting in the person's aura.
Mm.
Excuse me, folks. We have this sort of electromagnetic energy off of our skin, don't we?
Mm.
And of course, that's picking up. And any sort of, like you say, emotions that are trickling across the surface of the body on the skin will be absorbed into the metal because it attracts vibrations, doesn't it, and energy. So, but very often, if you're just going to do a reading from objects alone, it takes quite a while to sit and hold and tune in, and it takes a while before it starts happening. But it can be a very rewarding thing to do. You can find out a great deal of information of the lives of anybody whose energy is within that. I mean, literally, it isn't just a matter of, oh, I can feel that there must have been like a lady, middle-aged lady, that wore this once upon a time or something. You can actually pinpoint with a lot of patience and concentration. You can pinpoint the storyline of the person that was wearing it, the household the person lived in, and describe it, for instance.
Mm.
I'm not sure a lot of people spend enough time with that skill to be able to develop to that. I mean, some people have an instinct for it, an immediate,
sure.
But most of us, we can develop it. It's a very potent thing to do.
Mm. Yeah, so if we just allude back to one of the questions we posed at the start, Heather, in terms of, so who is psychic? I wonder if you could answer this very classical question that's asked very often is, do you believe that we are all psychic? Do you believe that everyone is psychic?
Absolutely, because it's the sixth sense, because we all have the sixth sense.
Mm. There'd be a lot of academics and scientist types that would probably argue strongly.
Because they've never allowed their imagination to open up to the subtle and to experience the subtle.
As we were talking before.
I think you'll find a lot of academics would want to experience it first intellectually.
Mm.
So they want an intellectual understanding of what it is and how it feels.
Mm.
The trouble is, you can't do that.
No.
It's because it's subtle, you have to find a part of you that can open to it, as we call it, and welcome it in, shall we say,
yes,
and then get to a point of experiencing it before you know what it is.
Mm.
Once you've experienced it, you know what it is, try to explain it.
Mm.
So how the hell can anybody be told intellectually what it is and what it feels like?
And if you're an intelligent type of person, you're kind of already predisposed to dismiss imagination as being woo-woo. So they're never even going to, you know, walk through the door, are they? They're never even going to have that first experience that might shift them or shunt them in their understanding.
Well, that is a modern day development.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Let's come from our new scientific approach, as I would call it.
Yeah.
I mean, the alchemists of old were our scientists. They were very open to the subtle.
Mm.
But then when following Newtonian knowledge, we then developed this scientific approach, shall we say, which was purely academic and intellectual, that was proving not the subtle, but it was bringing answers to what is there and what we can measure,
what we can analyse.
And it gave measures.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that was the important thing, and that's what we picked up and ran with as a species. We ran with this, being able to measure. It became very important to understand length, breadth, width, quality in that way. Mm. But it was when quantum physics, as we called it, or quantum mechanics, was found, shall we say, by those two scientists. That was when it was understood that there is something much more subtle we can tap into or ignore.
And I would say, in terms of looking at this, in terms of the longer now, it's we can say, well, at a time when the scientific method came to the fore, you know, witches were still being burned in Western Europe, you right. know, and so this, there was this idea of superstition. It's understandable that science took prominence. Does that make sense?
Yes, yeah. And of course, what I was going to say, you were saying the longer now. Would you like to explain the longer now in case everybody would know that?
The longer now is an understanding that comes from the teachings of the Celestine Prophecy, which we will be exploring in future episodes. We're actually going to be serialising all 9 teachers and the teachings of Shambhala, which are the 10th insight. So it'll be 5 episodes in total.
Yeah, it gives you so many explanations in that. So,
but anyway, the longer now is basically how you can only really have an understanding of what's occurring now in terms of human society, culture, the development of things in terms of medicine, all those in terms of culture. You can only understand where we're going now by understanding what has happened in the past. Is that right?
Yes, because if you look in the short history,
the myopic view
of human evolution, and you look at the shortened history picture, you won't understand where we're going. You won't understand who we are, what's developing, and that we are developing until you look way back and see how far we've come and how we've changed and the whole of society's changed. And I think it's understood about 1,000 years back, and that's the longer
and it's,
now.
It's just getting the broader perspective, really, isn't it?
Yes, because then you see the changes that we're going through. Mm. Otherwise, you don't see
And then
them.
you can contextualise them in a much more, I feel, sort of mature way. You can, it kind of, it's in a way, you don't have to see things in a conspiratorial control way. I think, you know, it's just a much more holistic view, if you like.
Well, it is, but it helps tremendously for a person to get a grasp of what's happening in modern times. And I don't think we see it properly unless we look at the longer now. Okay. I'm going to come back to the witches and the burning of the witches and superstition. I want to say that I think a lot of damage has been done understanding how to embrace the subtle existence of life for human beings because of superstition. Superstition is still rife in the world and in the Western world. I come across it a lot
within
still.
The spiritual alternative world.
Superstition has done an awful lot of damage. Superstition has what you would call created a lot of psychic and spiritual fantasy. It's a fear thing. It's a fear-based thing. Superstition is fear-based. And it's caused masses of harm in amounts of people trying to understand who they are, what they are, and what it's all about. And this was all tied up with the witches and the burning and the drowning and the torture of the witches in the past, which was a dreadful, dreadful thing that happened, as we know. I'm not sure where we got to here in the witches from psychic.
I took us off at a tangent.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad it was you this time instead of me. I will add that everything to do with psychic nowadays, that sounds so twee, but we do understand that we stay away from the superstition, the fantasy, spiritual stuff. And this is what I'm trying to say, that imagination is not fantasy. It's not the superstition, that it is real, and it's exactly quantum physics. Put it that way.
This is a nice little segue into a question I want to pose to you, Heather, is, so what is the usefulness of the psychic skill?
Well, I would say, not everybody would agree, skeptics wouldn't agree, but I do know that if we're if we're using our psychic skill and as a healer, now there are, I know a lot of healers that while they're approaching to send healing energy in whatever system that they're using, they're very often using their psychic skill to tune into where there are sluggish areas or dense areas in the body or blockages. Do you understand what I mean?
In terms of energy.
And yes. Well, yes, but it's on the meridian system and downloading into the physical, where then often physical ills can begin. And so using your psychic skill to tune in, you can direct the energy and the healing in those areas, or maybe chat to your client and say maybe it would be a good idea if you just went to the doctors and get checked out without alarming anybody, of course. But, you know, sometimes that's been known to be a very useful thing to do and to help people out. Government, and when I talk about the government, the usefulness in psychic with the government, I feel like I'm actually beginning to walk over to your area of interest of government and conspiracy, shall we
really?
Say?
Really? Gosh, you do flatter.
No, it's quite true.
I mean, we do know, it's common knowledge, isn't it, that during the Second World War, both the Nazis and the Allies used psychics, didn't they, to try and, you know, have an impression of where the war was going, or war strategy and things like that. So, I mean, you know, that was obviously what was being used at that time. So it's interesting that we're talking about fluffy superstition and then you have, you know, psychics being used like a world war. It's very paradoxical, isn't it?
And of course what came out of that was, is it Men Who Stare at Goats?
That's correct, yeah.
Which was... not the Blue Book, was it the Blue Book?
I can't remember now.
I think it was the Blue Book. Well documented, not made up,
no,
not conspiracy theory, it's truth, that this was used in American military and the psychic skill, remote viewing, all of these skills were understood to be accurate and to that they try to make them useful for government. So, but I'd still believe that governments do use psychics who can remote view to go into installations of their opposites, shall we say, their country, the opposite power, government power, to look at various armaments, explosive
technology development,
technology.
Yeah.
I happen to know that some of this does take place.
A very useful spying tool, we'll say then.
Yes, a very interesting area. But I do believe to be able to do that, I think that you have to have a skill to start off with, something that's inherent.
Yeah, sure.
And then developed on from there. All of these things need proper development in a proper way. I don't think everybody has the skill to do that, even if they are psychic.
Sure, yeah. And of course, in terms of police forces, they use, it's been well known, documented cases of them using psychics to try and, you know, find out who the murderer was or the rapist in a... crime
there's hardly a police force in the Western world. So you're talking all over. You're talking about New Zealand, Australia, America, Canada,
Europe.
Britain, probably Europe. I can't speak for Europe, but they're nearly all of the police departments are using a psychic that they know works well in their psychic skill. It's incredibly common. What's not been common is the admission of the police.
The two don't go together. Psychic, police force, never the twain shall meet.
Crazy lady with proper common sense skill. Yes, that they are using it because the psychic skill of tuning in to an event that happened and seeing some things that a human logic brain wouldn't normally be able to see or detect has proven itself over and over again as an ability, to the point that the police forces cannot deny anymore that it's useful in its helpfulness.
Although what you alluded to just before, Heather, was you're not going to see a Daily Mail headline, you know, mass murderer, you know, crime was solved by psychic. You know, it's not...
I think you'll find that most psychics say that they cannot solve crimes. They can come up with clues. They can come up with leads that the usual intellect can't see, detect, and they can come up with clues that have got to be investigated like all other leads and all other clues, but they never actually solve crimes, but they're part of the tools of crime solving.
Investigation. On this issue of usefulness, if we could just bring it back to, you know, the whole theme behind discerning consciousness, which is about, you know, being on the path of expanding your awareness, you know, understanding yourself more, growing, expanding your consciousness. How do you see the psychic skill in relationship to that? You know, how do you see, I mean, how do you see that in terms of developing your own individual psychic skill, how can it help us on our path towards, you know, expansion, growth, greater self-awareness?
I think it depends on where you put your importance to life. Because if you're somebody who's never thought about the psychic skill, never been interested in having a psychic skill or believing in a psychic skill, then the attention that you give your life is on all of the social practical expressions, like work, like income, like holidays, like family, children, home, and you focus entirely on that. Well, for people in those areas of life, I guess the psychic skill has little or no use.
Relevance, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think if you're a person that has an awareness there's something, or have noticed that you have a skill, by developing that, you can very often... Well, the most obvious one, I think, is to work as a psychic, but responsibly, and working as a psychic responsibly would say that you could help people when they have distress in their lives and confusion in their lives. And sometimes a psychic can bring clarity to the confusion. The other thing, though, it very often somebody working psychically can give proof to somebody who is psychic, a skeptic, I beg your pardon.
Sure.
They can give proof, thereby enabling more and more people to accept the more subtle sides of existence and nature. Another thing I think of is that when somebody has all of their skills developed, including their psychic one, they're actually a firing on all pistons.
Sure.
There's a balance there.
It's as we started by mentioning, it's our sixth sense. So if we're completely abandoning and ignoring that... How can we be a whole human being when we're out of balance?
Well, there's a bit of out of balance there going on, I believe. No sceptics wouldn't agree. I understand that. But I also understand, you know, a fully functioning psychic side and... you know what you can be. What there's a whole other existence that people can be absolutely bypassing. That is there and is part of our existence. It's part of who we are, part of our story, part of our history. That is absolutely not in some people's conception, and it's missing. But of course, people who don't have it don't feel it missing.
No.
So
exactly, if you don't have a perception of something, How can you have a perception that it doesn't exist?
But sometimes it's interesting when a person has had a profound experience. Often we can talk about when they've had a sad passing of family member. That's when they then decide at some point more often to turn towards what they would call as a psychic to see if their loved one is okay on the other side. It brings a great deal of solace. That's when some people who prefer to stay away from
that's how they'll dip their toe almost.
And begin to, with a very good psychic reading, or I would call a clairvoyant reading, because I have a differentiation between using your psychic skill and tuning into the spirit world. Tuning into the spirit world, I call clairvoyance, because I'm old school and that's what it used to be called post-war. So the psychic is a different skill. Tuning into the spirit world, you'll find that certain people will tune, or clairvoyants will tune into the spirit world, bring proof that such a skill and such a knowledge and such a place really exists. Other people will only believe that there is a more subtle existence that lives among us when they find themselves being haunted in their homes or in their place of work.
And on that subject, we point our listeners in towards a recent episode called The Paranormal, which we did together, which was very interesting if they want to look at ghostly apparitions.
Absolutely.
Thank you for that last explanation. That was a really nice way to sort of wind things up as we come towards the end. Is there anything else you wanted to say? Anything to leave our listeners with?
Well, for people who are interested, have some skill, but want further development, I would say, yes, please do that, because good working depends upon being taught discipline in this ability.
As with in all in fields these skills. Of life.
Absolutely. A discipline is seriously important in this. There is also safety and protection in doing this work. Although I was going to say just now that to tune into the spirit world, it is very important to know how to have protection, and protection comes in, number one, knowing how to call in a safety curtain or a safety bubble from the higher realms before you start. That sounded funny to you.
No, it's just very nicely put. I had this velvet curtain that just wafted in my imagination.
I see an luminous net curtaining.
Oh dear, you've been to far too many workshops.
But a lot of people see a bubble, which is good. But also for finding the appropriate guide from your spirit team. Everybody has a spirit team,
right?
And they don't get involved until you ask them. And there are safe methods for finding the appropriate helper from your spirit team, who will be the filter and the teacher, and that therefore also very much so teach work a lot in between yourself and the spirit world. That keeps you safe. It teaches you a lot, but it's knowing how to. So these things are really important to learn about. But I will come back to saying the psychic skill, I believe you don't need the protection because it's a natural part of yourself.
Sure, yeah.
You don't want
to create barriers, do you?
No, but it just is a part of you quite naturally. So you don't need all the protection. You don't need necessarily the guides to work with, because it's just you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you just developing that part of yourself stronger and stronger. But discipline is all. And going with somebody who will teach appropriate use of it, because there is inappropriate use of this skill. Somebody can have a skill and still use it inappropriately. So I will say with that, it's like tuning into somebody who is not asked to be tuned into.
Sure.
Very often on my tarot card reading sessions, somebody will say, I just want to ask about so-and-so, a member of my family, and what they're going to do in that situation. And I have to say, how old are they? But if they're not your children, and say below 18 or whatever, watershed, whatever cut-off line, if then even when they're over 18, I would not interfere in their lives and look into their lives in any way, shape or form without their permission.
Of course.
So it's that sort of appropriateness.
Well, thank you for bringing the issue of ethics to our listeners. I think that's an important point to raise, really. Good point to finish on as well.
Yes.
So, well, thank you, Heather. For appearing today. It's been a very interesting discussion on the psychic.
You're absolutely welcome. Thoroughly enjoyed
Thank
it.
You. So just to bring our listeners to the awareness that if they wish to contribute to Discerning Consciousness, we have a Facebook page, so you can contact us there, message us, leave any points of consideration, ideas for future episodes. We greatly appreciate your input, don't we, Heather?
Thank you, yes,
and also,
absolutely.
And also just to let the listeners know, in the coming months we'll be bringing on some new interesting people to interview, won't we? We've got some interesting plans afoot and people to invite onto the show, haven't we? So
yes.
So watch this space, so to
yes.
speak, shall we say.
More to come, folks.
A lot more to come, definitely. Right, we're both signing off now. So we hope you can join us again soon for another episode of Discerning Consciousness. Thank you very much. Bye for now.
This point of view.